Of all 50 governors, who's the longest serving and, by all accounts, the best shot? Today, on Uncommon Knowledge in Austin, Texas, the governor of the Lone Star State, Rick Perry. Uncommon Knowledge, now. Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. Be sure to visit us on our website at hoover.org/UK or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/UNCKnowledge. A fifth-generation Texan who grew up in Paint Creek. In the high school class of 1968, he was one of 13 students. Rick Perry graduated from Texas A&M University, served as a pilot in the United States Air Force, and returned home to join his father growing cotton. Then Rick Perry got into politics. Listen to this record. In 1984, Rick Perry was elected to the Texas House. He was re-elected in 1986 and 1988. In 1990, Rick Perry was elected Texas Agriculture Commissioner. He was re-elected in 1994. In 1998, Rick Perry was elected to Lieutenant Governor, becoming governor in 2000 when George W. Bush vacated the office to become president. In 2002, Rick Perry was elected governor in his own right. He was re-elected in 2006 and in 2010, and he is now the longest sitting governor in the United States of America and the longest serving governor in the history of Texas. Rick Perry, welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
Sorry it takes so much time, but that record, you're responsible for putting that record together. Governor, I'm here to talk about Texas, but there's one question I gotta ask. Let's just get it out of the way. You had never lost an election here in Texas, and then you went and ran for president. What went wrong?
How much time is this program now? Now, let me tell you, there's two things, and I tell people this with all sincerity, but if you're going to run for the presidency of the United States, you know, hindsight is a wonderful thing to have, you got to get in early. The idea of just a few months before the campaign kicks off with great vigor is not a wise thing. You know, a lot of people came to us and said, listen, we really need you to be in this race. You have a great record. And I suppose all those things are true. But being wise enough to understand that running for the presidency of the United States is probably one of the most difficult, time-consuming processes in the world. And then the second thing is, if you do decide to run for the presidency of the United States, I would highly suggest not having major back surgery 6 weeks before you kick it off. So we kind of built ourselves pretty difficult hurdles but it was a great experience. I wouldn't, you know, as difficult as it was. And I tell people, I said, man, if you go through life and you never face adversity, you never go through life and are not defeated in some form or fashion, what a boring life you've lived. You probably haven't taken any chances.
Right.
So I highly recommend people, maybe running for the presidency is not for you. But testing yourself, taking chances, is what America is all about. And I will forever be grateful that I had the opportunity, that there were people across this country that stood with me and believed in the ideas that I put on the table. And, as we go forward into this election, I'm not there, but the ideas that I talked about, whether it's that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, that printing more money by the federal government at the Fed is a really bad idea, that zero budgeting for federal aid to foreign countries is not a bad concept. Matter of fact, the Obama administration officials even said that. So the ideas that we laid out are still very, very powerful. And that's what this election, I hope, will turn upon, are the ideals and the philosophy that we talked about during this campaign.
Texas, Governor U-Haul rates. This is painful for me. This is very painful for me. I went online, and checked how much it would cost to rent a 26-foot U-Haul truck to drive from Palo Alto, California, where I live, to Austin, Texas, where you live. Right. And to go from California to Texas today would cost $1,855. To go from Austin to Palo Alto, $723.
We need to get those U-Haul trailers back to California.
And that's what makes it so hard. So I am no whiz in economics, but I'm pretty sure more people are coming here from California than going the other way around. Yeah. Briefly, what have you got going here?
Well, California, matter of fact, I just got back there this week from a little outreach program that I carry out there on a fairly regular basis, talking to businessmen and women. I talked to their Independent Producers and Royalty Association, and I talked to another group about the California comeback. I want California to succeed. I want them to be successful. California is too important to our national economy for them to fail. So getting that great state back on track economically is very important to me. Yes, I go recruit businesses out there. I want to give people the opportunity to know that there's a place they can come and work and risk their capital and be able to keep more of what they work for. But I want California to be successful for two reasons. Number one, it is an incredibly great state intellectually, economically, and the history of this country. And for them to not go forward, to be the great catalyst of technology is a loss for this country. So on the one hand, yeah, I'm going to go out there and be competitive against them. I'm going to try to create a climate in this state where Apple's looking at where they're going to relocate and to expand. Well, 6 weeks ago, they made that announcement. 3,600 jobs are coming to Austin, Texas, because they know that they can expand here and have a better opportunity to have a return on their investment. And that's happening time after time. And it's not just California. It's going into Illinois with Caterpillar and bringing their engine and their hydraulic manufacturing into the state of Texas. So it's the competition between states, though. Our founding fathers, as they wrote about the 10th Amendment, and they talked about the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited to it by the states was reserved for the states respectively, or to the people. It's a powerful but simplistic thing that says the federal government's supposed to do a few things really well, then get out of the way and let the states compete. And we have gotten so far away from that in this country today, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to get governors to accept, that, hey, listen, it is your responsibility as the chief executive officer of your states to work with your legislature to create a climate where your state can be more competitive and keep your business community thriving.
Governor, here's what I want to know. What can the rest of the country learn from Texas? Here's a quotation, and actually two quotations. Listen to this. Between June 2009 and June 2011, Texas, this is according to the Dallas Fed study, Texas accounted for 49.9% of the net new jobs created in the United States of America. 8% of the population, half of the net new jobs. Okay, that's one. Here's two. Economist Paul Krugman, I'm sure he's one of your favorites, writing in the New York Times, quote, "The Texan experience offers no useful lessons on how to restore national full employment. What Texas shows is that a state offering cheap labor and weak regulation can attract jobs from other states," close quote. What you've been doing is stealing jobs from elsewhere, and that won't help the nation.
Right.
I just set them up.
It really makes you question the Nobel Prizes, doesn't it? What are the standards? In all seriousness, I know he's the chief apologist for the Obama administration. And it is hard for the liberals from time to time to admit that they are just absolutely wrong when it comes to issues of the economy. He wrote within the last 2 weeks that we need to pump more money out of the Fed into the economy to bolster it. Now, that might save this presidency. I don't know. My instinct is not even that's going to save this presidency. When you look at the loss of jobs, when you look at the loss of wealth, from 2007 to current, we're back at 1992 levels of wealth in this country. Right. I mean, if you're a 25-year-old young voter, maybe in your second election, you're going to reelect this man who has put this country on a trajectory downward as bad as any that I certainly in my lifetime, whether it's the amount of debt that's been created. He has created, and the Obama administration has created more debt than the Bush administration in their entire 8 years. And I'm sure Mr. Krugman can come up with a reason for that, but the fact is he's just wrong. Competition is what drives a free enterprise environment. Having, you ask, why is Texas Texas?
Right. And what can the nation learn from Texas?
I'll give you three really simple but profound areas. You keep the taxes as low as you can on those job creators. You have a regulatory climate that is fair and predictable, and a legal system that doesn't allow for oversuing. And then you try to get out of the way and let the private sector do what the private sector does best. You know, Mr. Krugman again wrote that, or maybe it was E.J. Dion, I get them confused. Philosophically, they're both in the same camp, is that the government needs to be spending more money. Government creates jobs. And, you know, government probably does create some jobs in the military, which is one of the things that they should do. My dad, 87-year-old, dad still considers himself to be a Democrat. Conservative one, but he said a number of times, you know, the federal government ought to do just a few things and do them well, like stand the military, secure our border, and deliver the mail, preferably on Saturdays and on time. And actually, we're probably to the point now that we realize that there's a better way to deliver the mail. FedEx and UPS have shown that the private sector does a heck of a lot better job and would do it more efficiently and effectively. So, If the government would just stand the military and defend our borders and then let the states work on all these other ones, I think Americans would be
You just mentioned your dad. Segment two here, the man from Paint Creek. I'm quoting you in a 2010 interview. Quote, this is you. Ours was a little bungalow-style house. We bathed on the back porch in the number two wash tub. There was an outhouse that lasted until 57 or 58 when Dad built indoor plumbing. Basically, Dad was a dry land cotton farmer, and he always referred to that part of Texas as the Big Empty. What does the man who has sat on top of Texas politics for more than a decade now consider the most important lessons he learned in Paint Creek, Texas?
Treat people with respect, regardless of where they come from or what their background might be. People who, I mean, we didn't consider ourselves to be poor, but we were like everyone else in that community. And whether it was, you know, regardless of the color of your skin or the sound of your last name, I want to say 20 or 25% of my classmates were Hispanic. We all were raised pretty much the same. You were going to be judged on your character. You were going to be judged on your values. And you were going to be judged on your responsibility. And what I mean by responsibility is, are you going to work hard in life? Are you going to live by the rules and realize that there are a set of values in this country? I mean, I grew up in a Judeo-Christian community. And those values, I mean, I don't want to go off down this road, but the fact is that those values have served this world for a couple thousand years pretty well.
Governor, Lyndon Johnson and Sam Rayburn both grew up poor in Texas. Matter of fact, Sam Rayburn grew up on a cotton farm. And they both concluded that poor folks needed the help of the government. Sam Rayburn was speaker when the New Deal was being enacted in Washington.
I went to Sam Rayburn's funeral.
I know. I'm coming to that, too. And Lyndon Johnson enacted the Great Society. So here you have, in your experience as a boy in Texas, in their experience as boys in Texas, in a lot of ways, pretty similar. And Lyndon Johnson and Sam Rayburn grow up to be champions of the federal government. And you grow up to, well, we've just heard you. You're no champion of the federal government. How come? How do you account for that difference?
I actually am a champion of the federal government in limited ways. We have the greatest military in the world. Young men and women who are sacrificing today for our freedoms. We have a federal government that has some real responsibilities.
But the welfare state, subsidies.
I will suggest to you, well, I'm not a big... I think that there were times in our country's history where the federal government did have a role to play. For instance, rural electrification. I moved into a house that still had a carbide plant. In 1951, 52. So the idea that there was not a role for federal government to play, I will suggest to you that there was. The problem with government is it doesn't know when to quit playing its role, if you will, after they have an issue addressed and get back out of the way and let the private sector come in. That's the problem with government. We still got programs in place that were put in place by Franklin Roosevelt during the 1930s that we don't need anymore, that cost huge amounts of money. I will suggest to you that, why do we have a Department of Education? Why? I mean, why do we have a Department of Education in this country today at the federal level?
Governor, your dad's still a Democrat. You were raised a Democrat. One of the formative experiences, or one of the sharpest memories of your growing up, was attending the funeral of Sam Rayburn down the street here in the state capitol. And you remained a Democrat yourself until 1989. Why'd you change parties?
Yeah, actually, his funeral was in Bonham, Texas.
Oh, excuse me.
For corrective purposes.
I gave you permission to correct me.
Yes, sir.
I'm doing my best, yes, sir. But I am a foreigner.
His funeral was in Bonham, Texas in September 1961. And we drove from Paint Creek to Bonham, and it's a pretty good piece. I never met a Republican until I was in my 20s, and I was in the Air Force.
Are you serious? Never met a Republican?
Not that admitted it. I mean, my great grandfather was a county commissioner. His father-in-law was a county judge and a member of the state legislature. We didn't have a Republican governor in Texas until 1978. 104 years after Reconstruction, and the last Republican governor of Texas. So the idea that you would, you know, maybe in the cities there were some people who were Republicans, but not out in the rural agricultural areas of the state. There were no Republicans. We didn't have a Republican primary in my home county until 1990, the year I ran for statewide office as the agriculture commissioner. And the only reason Haskell County had one then was because my mother wanted to vote for her son.
So did Texas change or did the parties change? Texas used to be, as you just said, one of the most thoroughly Democratic states in the country. And now it is one of the most thoroughly Republican.
Sure. Yes, Texas.
So what changed?
Texas changed, but maybe not in the way that you were thinking I'm going to answer. Texas changed because it became a very economically strong state. John, when you were the Secretary of State, you lived in a state that was going through this transitional period politically, but we were also going through a change economically. And I think that's been the real driving force for, as people become more affluent, I will suggest to you, they make decisions about their political positions based on their economics. And as a state becomes more affluent, as it becomes wealthier, as jobs are created that in turn create the wealth, then people sit back and they go, well, wait a minute, you know, why are they taking that much of my money away from me? It's still ongoing in this state today. I will suggest in South Texas, as we discover oil and gas reserves that we didn't even know we had in an area of the state that has historically been very Democrat, that there are young Hispanic families who today have some substantial wealth that they didn't have 4 years ago, and they're going, wait a minute, what do you mean you're taking 38-40% of what our royalty check is to go to the federal government? And I believe that those individuals may be thinking about becoming Republicans.
Segment three, you just raised what to me is one of the most fascinating aspects of this state. Frankly, it's one of the ones I understand least. So these are questions that I especially want to hear your answer to. Tejas. As of last year, the Pew Center for Hispanics estimated that the number of illegal immigrants in Texas stood at about 1.6 million, and that whereas the overall number of illegal immigrants in the country as a whole is down a little bit, in Texas it's still up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay. The demands of the law, the demands of simple decency. What's the right way to deal with illegal immigration?
Yeah. First, you have to address the issue of how illegal immigration is occurring, and that is a porous border. And that is the federal government. We talked about that there were a couple of things that the federal government needs to do and do well, stand a military, and the other is defend our and secure our border. They have been abject failures at the second. They are not securing our border. Therefore, border states in particular, and even all the way up through the Midwest and to the Northeast across this country, you see issues with illegal immigrants and the cost of those individuals into those communities, whether it's health care, education, etc. But it happened first because we have failed to secure the border. So the idea that somehow or another, during the presidential election, there were a number of people on the stage pointing at me and saying, why did you do X and why did you do Y?
Let me give you one.
I would have done differently.
Governor Romney in October, quote, you, Governor Perry, you put in place a magnet to draw illegals into the state, giving $100,000 of tuition credits to those that come into this country. Let's stipulate, he's the party's nominee. I know you've endorsed him. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to start
a
fight here.
I understand.
But what's the response to that?
Well, it wasn't just Governor Romney. I mean, Rick Santorum, I mean, practically everyone on the stage criticized me for the obvious reasons. I get it. You know, you're the front runner at the presidential debate at the Reagan Library. I was the front runner. And I might just share with you, it was three of the most exhilarating hours of my life. But the point is that none of those individuals had the responsibility of making decisions on how to deal with that issue in their home state. Here's factually what you have to deal with. We have these tens of thousands of young people graduating from high schools, and are you going to make a decision that puts them on track to go on to a welfare state, or are you going to find a way to, and these are young people who showed up here by no fault of their own, did all the work, they passed all the coursework, they did work well enough to be able to be accepted to the university systems that we have in the state. And are you basically going to say, you know, we're not going to let you go to our states and our universities, because if you're going to make them pay out of state, you basically are saying you're not going to be able to go to our universities because you can't afford it. So the state of Texas, through their legislature, and I might add it was an overwhelming vote. I think there were five dissenting votes out of 150, 31, 181 votes. Five dissenting votes. The people of the state of Texas said, we would rather have these individuals pay in-state tuition than we would have them go on the welfare rolls. This was a straight-up economic issue.
Governor, a couple of statistics. From 2000 to 2010, the Hispanic proportion of Texas rose from 32 to 38%, and, according to the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts, quote, by 2020, that is 8 years from now, by 2020, the Texas Hispanic population is expected to outnumber the white population. Those are the statistics. Here's a quotation from The Economist magazine. Hispanics will become ever more powerful in an ever stronger Democratic Party. Whisper it softly, but Texas looks set to become a Democratic state.
Right. I disagree with the latter part of that. The first part, we will be a Hispanic majority state, but they will become Republicans. And they'll become Republicans because of this, or these reasons, I should say. When you delve into the character of the Hispanic in Texas, you find individuals who are incredibly patriotic. When you look at our military and you see the young men and women that are serving in our country, you see substantial numbers of Hispanic men and women serving. You see people who are very strong, with very strong family ties, familial ties, with the values of the Catholic Church that are pro-life, that are very much in line with that traditional Judeo-Christian values of the Republican Party. So as they become wealthier, as they become educated, they take over the businesses of their fathers or their mothers, as they buy businesses, as they become educated, they're going to make a decision about which one of these political parties is going to allow me to live in freedom. And that's clearly the Republican Party. The Democrat Party has historically, and in today's world we see it even more so, the party of government, and the party of particularly the federal government and a centralized federal government sharing their requirements of you living your life this way. And if you want to be free, if you want to live free, you will become a Republican.
Governor, last question on Hispanics, but an important one. According to a recent poll, President Obama leads Governor Romney among Hispanics by 70 to 14%. Your advice for Governor Romney?
Well, I think Governor Romney's headed in the right direction. He's talking about economic freedom. And when you talk about economic freedom, when he talks about the traditional values that the Hispanic, again, polls are polls and they're a snapshot in time. By the time November rolls around, I will suggest to you that Governor Romney is going to be somewhere around 35, 40% of the Hispanic vote, because they're looking at, you know, do I want to go backwards economically? And that's what this president has to offer. You can spin it as many ways as you want, which I'm sure they will try to do. But at the end of the day, this administration that is currently in control in Washington, D.C., has America on a downward trajectory from an economic standpoint. And there is no sugarcoating it. When you see job numbers, unemployment headed in the direction that those last reports were, when you see something as powerful as the wealth of this country has declined, has gone south to 1992 levels, just, you know, turn the clock back. I don't think that whether you're Hispanic, African American, is that the direction you want this country to go? And I will suggest to you the answer is going to be a rather overwhelming no.
Governor, segment four here. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Let me just paint a picture for you.
What caliber would you like?
You're a step ahead of me, as you have been through this entire interview. The role of religion. Let me just, Texas, and you, role of religion in public life. And Reliant Stadium in Houston last August, this is just before you entered the presidential race, you lead a call to prayer for a nation in crisis. Gay marriage, you supported the constitutional amendment that limits marriage to one man and one woman here in the state of Texas. The death penalty, Texas regularly accounts for between a third and half the executions that take place in the United States on abortion. You signed the 2003 Women's Right to Know Act. You signed the 2003 Prenatal Protection Act. You signed the 2005 Parental Consent Measure. You signed legislation. You are serious on abortion. You signed legislation in 2011 that excluded Planned Parenthood from the Women's Health Program. And let me sum this up with two quotations here. The first by former Republican Mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani, quote, "The more guns you take out of society, the more you are going to reduce murder," close quote. The second quotation is from the governor of the Lone Star State, Rick Perry. Quote, "I'm for gun control. Use both hands." So here's the question. You know, when you were running for president, a lot of people said, well, he's good on the economics, but Lord, why won't he just back off on the social issues? And the question is Texas, you already made the case that Texas is an example, in your judgment, for the nation on economics. On social issues, is Texas a special case or, once again, a model and an example for the nation itself?
If you're going to base your public service upon your values, then you're going to get criticized by those who don't agree with those values. I don't back away from my positions on traditional marriage, on abortion. Those are values, and actually they're values that from my perspective, they can't be equivocated. I mean, you're either for traditional marriage or you're not. You're either for protecting innocent life or you're not. You are either for dispensing justice in your state as your citizens have decided, both statutorily and constitutionally, or you're not. You know, the issue of traditional marriage is one that continues to bubble forward. And I happen to believe that if you're going to have a society that is successful, economically or otherwise, you're going to have values that you attach that society to. For 2,000 years, we have had marriage between a man and a woman. And in, I think, 25 plus states that have voted on that issue, when it's been left to the people to vote on, they have supported traditional marriage between one man and one woman. And, you know, I suspect that issue is not going to go away. But just because you share a different view or you are flexible on the issue does not mean that God has changed his mind about it.
All right. Governor, a couple last questions here. One on the nation, one on the great state of Texas. On the nation. I've highlighted points in your record. You've been the governor of this state for a good long time, but recently you enacted the loser pay rules. Governor Daniels of Indiana, Governor Jindal of Louisiana, mm-hmm. Going through what governors have done here, both enacted sweeping school voucher programs. Governor Walker of Wisconsin, we saw what he just did in balancing his budget and limiting union power in the state. Governor Fallon of Oklahoma has proposed eliminating the Oklahoma income tax altogether, maybe because she's losing too many people to you. Now, there's an argument that Governor Romney, the GOP presidential candidate, has yet to propose a single reform that's as sweeping and deep as reforms you've enacted and Governor Daniels has enacted and Governor Walker has enacted. And so the question is, and again, let's stipulate you've endorsed Governor Romney and you've made clear you intend to campaign hard for him. But how do conservatives remain conservative? How do the reform governors in the middle of the country retain their intellectual integrity, their sense of initiative during the Romney years?
Well, we don't need a president making big sweeping reforms. I mean, that's part of, I think, the beauty of the 10th Amendment. We need a president who respects the 10th Amendment, who respects the Constitution, and basically gets out of the way and starts rolling back a lot of the things that have been forced on the states. For instance, that's a good Freudian slip, President Romney, soon to be President Romney, is going to do is rolling back Obamacare. He said that. He's talked about it. He understands that that is a great move into the state's sovereign rights to deliver a service that they should be doing, not the federal government. So, you know, I think Governor Romney understands clearly that if he will be a president that pushes back the decision-making to the states, that there are a host of governors, and you've mentioned just a few of them, Susana Martinez over in New Mexico and Brian Sandoval in Nevada, that are absolutely going to put tax and regulatory and legal policies into place to make their states be more competitive. And when that happens, the federal government's role, again, should be look for ways to roll back. I mean, if the issue is the federal government is spending too much money, and I would suggest to you, other than the Paul Krugmans of the world, that the federal government is spending too much money. Find the ways to roll those programs back, remove that burden on the taxpayers, and allow the states to decide how best to deliver health care, how best to educate their children, how best to build transportation infrastructure. America will be a stronger country at that particular point in time. And states like California will have a chance to flourish, because I'll give you one example as we wrap up here. Obamacare to California, that already has some fairly substantial requirements. They have in Obamacare the maintenance of efforts clause that says you cannot in the future reduce any of those programs. That singularly will bankrupt the state of California if it's left in place. So a president who recognizes that Obamacare is a huge imposition on the states and our founding fathers' visions of how states should be functioning is the kind of president I want, and Mitt Romney understands that, and he will be a great president if he follows what he said he will do, which I have no reason to think he will not.
Last question. I landed in Dallas the other day, and the drive from the airport to my hotel took me through a residential neighborhood only about 3 miles. Governor, I counted them. It was a weekday. It was not a national holiday.
Texas
it was not
flags.
I counted Texas flags. I counted more than 36 American flags on an ordinary day of the week. I saw a political placard. Frankly, I'm still reeling from this. I saw a placard in somebody's front yard. I couldn't believe I'd seen it. And then I saw another one. They were both left over from the voting last Tuesday. I can't remember the candidate's name, but in big letters at the top of the placard, it said, conservative. And in big letters at the bottom of the placard, it said Republican. And where I come from, conservatives don't waste their time running for office because there are too few of them to get elected. And even Republicans never even mention their party affiliation. And I had dinner with a friend. He's a kind of a hedge fund fellow up in Dallas. You could drop him in Manhattan, and by income level and education and line of work, he'd look right at home. And I mentioned that I'd be interviewing you, and he got a little testy, and I thought, uh-oh, here it comes. And as a matter of fact, it was because he wasn't quite sure you were conservative enough every so often.
I get that from time to time.
And so what makes Texas, Texas?
Well, here's the bigger issue for me. It's okay that you live in a liberal enclave. That's the beauty of America. People move with their feet. They vote with their feet. And over the course of the last decade, people have voted with their feet, and they've come to the state of Texas. And I will suggest to you that if we will allow these states to be the arbiters of issues like health care and education, transportation infrastructure, the other issues that make your quality alive, that we'll get this all sorted out. But if Washington, D.C. continues to try to make one size fit all in all of these, then we will become a country that is even more separated from each other. There will be more turmoil. It will be more economic calamity. But if we will respect that, you know, there are people who want to have government do these things for them. And then, you know, they can go live in New York. They can go live in New York. But the point is, we shouldn't be criticized as the media elite in the Northeast seem to like to do for how we choose to live our lives. I think that's, again, the beauty of the 10th Amendment and why this country, I think, would be substantially happier. You know, if you want to live in an enclave where more liberal thought is appropriate, then...
Governor, I lied. That wasn't the last question. Here's the last question. Gail Collins, New York Times columnist, has a new book out. And I have to confess, I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I've looked at it. It's up on Amazon now. And I understand she's coming to Austin to speak.
Great.
And the title of this book... the title of this book is As Texas Goes, How the Lone Star State Has Hijacked the American Agenda, close quote. And my last question, Governor, it's been a pleasure. My last question is that book on your reading table?
No, but I'll probably get some excerpts just so that I can correct her in the the obvious errors that she's made. I mean, the fact is, I'm glad she's coming to Texas. I hope she spends a lot of money here. And but I also hope that she will be open to find out that there is a reason that this state is leading this country economically. I mean, just this week, we were chosen for the Golden Shovel Award, which is a big business accolade that the best state in the nation from the standpoint of job creation. You know, CEO Magazine, which I will suggest to you is the most defining award. CEO Magazine chose Texas as the number one state in the nation to do business for the 8th year in a row. Those are men and women who actually have to deal with it. I mean, it's not some, you know,
it's not Gail Collins.
It is not. These are people who truly understand what it takes to keep a business going and make a profit and put people to work. But that's what's really going on in this state. You know, just because you disagree with our conservative values, that's fine. I'm not going to make Gail Collins come live in Texas and, you know, in our sweltering heat of August. I want her to be up wherever she is, where it's nice and cool and what have you. But please don't say that we're intellectually inferior, culturally inferior, or inferior in any way. Because at that particular point in time, those are fighting words, ma'am.
Rick Perry of Paint Creek, 47th governor of the great state of Texas, thank you.
You're welcome, Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. For Uncommon Knowledge in Austin, I'm Peter Robinson.
Did this backstage because I didn't know whether I would actually ruin his reputation or not by doing this, but we have made Peter an honorary Texan. So you can
I've always wanted that shirt.
You can now wear the boots and the hat.
But I have three sons who are going to finally conclude their dad must have done something cool.
Amen.
Thank you, Governor.